pig's ear soup. Now, what's that tell you about a place, eh? Rincewind shrugged. Very provident people. Some other bugger pinches the pig. He turned in the saddle. The group of ex-prisoners shrank back. Now, see here, he said. I told you, you're free. Understand? One of the braver men spoke up.
Yes, master.
I ain't your master. You're free. You can go whenever you like. Excepting if you follow me, I'll kill the lot of you. And now, go away.
Where, master?
Anywhere. Somewhere not here.
The men gave one another some worried looks, and then the whole group, as one man, turned and trotted away along the path.
Probably go straight back to their village, he said, rolling his eyes. Worse than whips, I tell you.
He waved a scrawny hand at the landscape as they rode on.
Strange bloody country, he said. Did you know there's a wall all round the empire?
That's to keep the barbarian invaders out.
Oh, yes, very defensive, said Cohen sarcastically. Like, oh my goodness, there's a 20-foot wall, dear me, I suppose we'd just better ride off back over 1,000 miles of steppe and not, e.g., take a look at the ladder possibilities inherent in that pine wood over there. No, it's to keep people in. And rules? They've got rules for everything. No one even goes to the privy without a piece of paper.
Well, as a matter of fact, I myself...
A piece of paper saying they can go is what I meant. Can't leave your village without a chit. Can't get married without a chit. Can't even have a Oh, here we are.
Yes, indeed, said Rincewind. Cohen glared at him.
How did you know? He demanded.
Rincewind tried to think. It had been a long day. In fact, it had, because of the thalmic equivalent of jet lag, been several hours longer than most other days he'd experienced, and had contained 2 lunchtimes, neither of which had contained anything worth eating.
I thought you were making a general philosophical point, he hazarded. Like, we'd better make the best of it.
I meant we're at my hideout, said Cohen.
Rincewind stared around them. There were scrubby bushes, a few rocks, and a sheer cliff face.
I can't see anything, he said.
Yep, that's how you can tell it's mine.
The art of war was the ultimate basis of diplomacy in the Empire. Clearly, war had to exist. It was a cornerstone of the processes of government. It was the way the Empire got its leaders. The competitive examination system was how it got its bureaucratic and public officials, and warfare was for its leaders, perhaps, only a different kind of competitive examination. Admittedly, if you lost, you probably weren't allowed to resit next year. But there had to be rules. Otherwise, it was just a barbaric scuffle. So, hundreds of years ago, the art of war had been formulated. It was a book of rules. Some were very specific. There was to be no fighting within the Forbidden City. The person of the Emperor was sacrosanct. And some were more general guidelines for the good and civilized conduct of warfare. There were the rules of position, of tactics, of the enforcement of discipline, of the correct organization of supply lines. The art laid down the optimum course to take in every conceivable eventuality. It meant that warfare in the Empire had become far more sensible and generally consisted of short periods of activity followed by long periods of people trying to find things in the index. No one remembered the author. Some said it was Wan Tzu Tsung. Some claimed it was Three Sun Tsung. Possibly it was even some unsung genius who had penned, or rather painted, the very first principle, know the enemy and know yourself. Lord Hong felt that he knew himself very well, and seldom had trouble knowing his enemies, and he made a point of keeping his enemies alive and healthy. Take the Lords Sung, Fang, Tang and McSweeney. He cherished them. He cherished their... adequacy. They had adequate military brains, which was to say that they had memorized the 5 rules and 9 principles of the art of war. They wrote adequate poetry, and were cunning enough to counter such coups as were attempted in their own ranks. They occasionally sent against him assassins who were sufficiently competent to keep Lord Hong interested and observant and entertained. He even admired their adequate treachery. No one could fail to realize that Lord Hong would be the next emperor, but when it came to it, they would nevertheless contest the throne. At least officially. In fact, each warlord had privately pledged his personal support to Lord Hong, being adequately bright to know what was likely to happen if he didn't. There would still have to be a battle, of course, for custom's sake, but Lord Hong had a place in his heart for any leader who would sell his own men. Know your enemy. Lord Hong had decided to find a worthwhile one. So Lord Hong had seen to it that he got books and news from Ankh Morpork. There were ways. He had his spies. At the moment, Ankh Morpork didn't know it was the enemy, and that was the best kind of enemy to have. And he had been amazed, and then intrigued, and finally lost in admiration for what he saw. "I should have been born there," he thought, as he watched the other members of the Serene Council. "Oh, for a game of chess with someone like Lord Vetinari. No doubt he would carefully watch the board for 3 hours before he even made his first move."
End of CD 2.